Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Law Library. The Law Library is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Library is an educational service in public interest in the area of George Corn. Now, the Law Hour, an editorial review, is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour, an editorial review, brings you important information about law news and current events. Stay tuned for tonight's special report on eminent domain and the Kello case when we come back. You know, over the past century, we Americans who were once independent, capable, and able to manage our own financial, medical, and legal affairs have now been reduced to dependence, incompetence, incapacity. We have now been made wards of powerful commercial, financial, medical, and legal corporations, cartels, and bureaucratic institutions of our modern industrial society. And we've been taught to rely upon these paid professionals like bankers, who manage our financial affairs, or doctors, who manage and treat our health problems, or lawyers, who we rely upon to direct our business and legal affairs instead of relying upon our own good common sense. Now, that's why I contend that it's time that we Americans who were once able to catch our own fish learn once again how to fish instead of being fed by these paid professionals. And that means regaining our power of attorney as the single most important step in regaining our capacity, rights, liberties, and duties. Now, if you'd like to learn more about courtroom strategy and procedure, why don't you write for my free general law CD package first? Now, that's an educational, informative, and entertaining package. Best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. If you're online, just go to the website and send me an email. Remember, the website is georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about this thing of the Kello case, K-E-L-O. I probably received 10 or 15 reports, treatises, articles that have been written by a number of very prominent people across the country concerning that Kello case in New London, Connecticut. Every one of them negative. Every one of them said the Supreme Court's out to lunch and made a bad decision. My analysis of the case is that the court made the right decision, and so I decided to tell you here's why I think that's the correct decision. And, more importantly, what is the central issue in a takings case, an eminent domain case, and what is it that we should be zeroing in on? Now, Ms. Kello is about to lose her case. Now, she's got one last shot. The last shot is the shot she should have been taking to start with, and that is just compensation. Whether or not this property is being taken for a purpose or a cause that you agree with is not germane to the issue. So rather than argue about the big box store or the Navy base, docks, forts, arsenals, and shipyards, the key issue in a takings case is bring your checkbook, boys, and I want just compensation. Now, you're not going to prevent the king from taking your property because he'll pry it out of your cold, dead fingers if that's what it's going to take. So before we get down to your cold, dead fingers, why don't we concentrate on a more intelligent approach, one in which we get paid the full, fair, just compensation that the Constitution guarantees us in the Fifth Amendment. Now, oftentimes, people will follow a law or they will follow an action that they believe is correct. In U.S. versus Minker, cited at 350 U.S. 179, on page 187, here's what it says. Because of what appears to be a lawful command on the surface, many citizens, because of their respect for what appears to be the law, are cunningly coerced into waiving their rights due to ignorance. People's ignorance of the law oftentimes causes them to do something against their best interests. It appears to be the law. It appears to be the right thing to do. It appears to be what everybody else is doing. It's what the advisors, it's what the lawyers told me to do. But they are, in fact, being cunningly coerced into waiving their rights due to their ignorance. Years ago, I came to the conclusion that my ignorance of my legal rights was costing me a lot of money, and I decided to do something about it. So in this program, I want to give you a couple of examples of what happens when you're ignorant of your rights and what happens when you straighten out that ignorance and you become knowledgeable. First story I want to tell you is about Dallas, Texas and Granville Street. I did a school one time down in San Antonio, Texas, and I had a student come in there, a very wealthy fellow from Dallas, Texas. He and his family operate a number of restaurants and bars, not that they actually operate the day-to-day operations, but they own a number of restaurants and bars on Granville Street in Dallas, Texas. Now, Granville Street is a unique part of town. It's kind of out from downtown Dallas, and it's a very trendy, upscale nightclub, dinner club, young people's rendezvous place. And this street is probably a mile or 2 miles long. I didn't measure it, but it's a mile or two. It's like a strip, not a wide street like a boulevard. It's only two lanes wide. And it's lined with restaurants and shops and stores on both sides of the street, probably an older part of town would be my guess. Very trendy, very, very wealthy piece of real estate. And over time, probably 50 restaurants, bars, and various night spots have located on the street. And tens of thousands of people go there throughout the week, but especially on Friday and Saturday and Sunday nights. Now, you can imagine how the neighbors in the residential areas around Granville Street look at Granville Street. To them, it's a nuisance. To them, it's a strip. To them, it destroys the neighborhood. Now, to give you an illustration, let's take a house three blocks off of Granville. It's in a trendy neighborhood, and the house is worth, let's say, the national average, $210,000. And you want to maintain, you want to preserve your investment in your home. After all, you live here, and it's worth $200,000, and you want this. Now, let's go down to Granville Street. The same size piece of property in a vacant lot, just used for a parking lot, is worth five times that. It's worth $1 million, just one lot. Now, that's the difference between residential and commercial. Commercial property is worth five times, 10 times, and in some cases, 20 times as much as residential property. It sells by the square foot. And I remember one time reading a story about Tokyo before the real estate collapse, and property was selling in Tokyo for $2,000 a square foot. $2,000 a square foot. I saw the numbers and I choked and I said, my God. You know, you're talking about tens of millions of dollars for real estate. Now, I don't know what real estate is worth in New York City, but let's just take Times Square in New York City. That's very, very valuable commercial property. Now, you can go two blocks off of Times Square, and it's probably very valuable commercial property, but not as valuable as Times Square. Now, I'm not an expert on the value of New York City property. I'm just trying to draw you a little parallel picture here as to what happens when we have eminent domain and a condemnation for commercial purposes, because the person who owns residential property and then is forced by eminent domain to sell that property for residential values is getting screwed, blued, and tattooed. Now, let me demonstrate why that's true. This man who came to my courtroom strategy and procedure school said, I'm coming to this school because I've got a real estate problem. And he described his problem like this. He said, I own a number of these restaurants, but he said, we have a real Achilles heel, and that is parking. You can't have a restaurant without parking. So you can't park in front of other people's houses. That's against the city ordinances. And we don't have enough parking on Granville Street. And I said, well, what about just buying residential properties, tearing them down, and then parking cars on them? He said, you know, that's great on Granville Street and up to the alleys on both sides of Granville. But from there on, it's zoned residential. And they've got a neighborhood committee, a zoning and planning committee, that is controlled by greenies that are absolutely opposed to any further expansion of commercial and commercialization on Granville Street. And I said, no, they can't do that because, you see, that impairs your property rights. And he said, well, that's what they're doing. And that's why I want to see, is there something that I can do that I can use my property rights on Granville Street? And I said, well, certainly. Well, he took me around for a couple of days, and he showed me his properties, and he took me onto the next street. I'm going to say Granville runs north and south. I don't really remember, but let's say it runs north and south. So he took me over to the east side of Granville, next street over, and he said, I bought these four houses here and tore them down. And then I went to the zoning and planning people, and I said, let me rezone this from residential to commercial. It's right on the back side of my restaurant. And by doing that, it will alleviate all of this traffic congestion on Granville Street. It will increase the property values of the neighbors around me. And the zoning and planning people said, no, no, absolutely no, and you can't do this. Now, after you get this turned down, you have to wait a year before you can make a new application. And he said, until there's a change in the political atmosphere, he said, I've got this property. I paid for this property. I paid the full value of the property, maybe a little bit more, and now I can't use it. I've got four residential lots. I can build four houses on these lots, but I can't use it for parking or any other purpose. And he said, I don't want to build houses. I want to build parking lots. And I said, well, what do the neighbors around those houses think? And he said, all of the neighbors around me are in favor of rezoning commercial because it will make their property worth five times more than it is today as residential. So I said, all of your neighbors, 100%, are in favor of it. And the only people that are opposed to it are the people who are several blocks away from Granville, the greenies, who are in control of zoning and planning. He said, yep, that's it. And I said, you know, that impairs your property right. You've got a property right just like those residential owners. And your property right is just as good as theirs. Furthermore, the majority of the close neighbors want to rezone that commercial, and zoning and planning won't do it, even though the majority of people that are impacted directly want it. He said, that's right. So I said, well, let's go to your state statutes. And he did. And the state legislature outlined a procedure that you go through. And the procedure is fairly simple and straightforward. you go to the neighbors that are next door to you, across the street from you, and then there are some distances like 100 feet, 200 feet, and 300 feet, and this is called the impact zone. And you see what they have to say. And all of these neighbors, remember, are in favor of this. So, okay, now you file a petition, and you go up before zoning and planning, and when they turn you down, you take it right straight into district court, and you sue zoning and planning for a discriminatory policy in violation of the statute. He did. The court overturned zoning and planning, and he got his four lots turned into parking lots. Furthermore, all of the close neighbors, their property was rezoned to commercial, and their property now is worth five times more than it was before. So if these houses were worth $200,000, and this developer, this real estate man, paid $200,000 each for it, and remember that the owner sold voluntarily. He walked up and said, I'd like to buy your house. They said, good, get your checkbook out. He did. He wrote the check, and he bought the property, knocked the house down, and now he's got the vacant lot. Zoning and planning says you can't use it for what you want to use it for. Today, he's using them for parking lots. Furthermore, across the street, it benefits every homeowner across the street because his property is now worth commercial value. His property, that homeowner's property, is now worth $1 million instead of $200,000. Now, that's capitalism. That's the marketplace. That's property and property rights in operation. The opposite to that now is property by committee. That's property by socialist, communist, 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. Zoning and planning is a socialist procedure. It has nothing to do with property and property rights. In fact, it's the antithesis of it. It's the opposite to property and property rights. So let's take a look at what is property. We go to Bouvier's Law Dictionary, page 2750. Property, the right and interest which a man has in lands and chattels to the exclusion of others. It is the sole and despotic dominion which one man claims and exercises over the external things of the world in total exclusion of the right of any other individual in the universe. And the universe word is not accidental. If God Almighty himself claims that he's got a property right in that piece of property, then you can't own it. I know people will make that say, well, that belongs to God. Okay, well, then it doesn't belong to you. It's just that simple. If you own it, God doesn't, and if God owns it, you don't. Because the word universe is aimed at God himself. Now, in the Bible, God has given us certain types of property. He says, I'm going to give you the gold and silver and the chattels in the land. You can have that. That's your property. You can have a property right in your wives and in your children. The only species, the only type of property that God ever withheld from us is the land. And he says, the land shall not be sold forever. Now, I don't know how long forever is, boys and girls, but it's a long time. And it's not up yet. Land can't be bought and sold. It's against the law. Now, when the state comes in and they say, well, we want to buy your land, we saw in the last program, a fellow by the name of Naboth said, no, I'm not going to sell you the land. Not going to sell it. Why is that? He said, because it's an inheritance and I can't sell my inheritance. Now, there's an exception to this rule. Inside of a walled city, you can buy and sell land with a one-year right of redemption. Dallas is a city. And inside of the city of Dallas, you can buy and sell land. You can buy and sell real estate. You can buy and sell property. And you got a year to redeem it. Outside of the city, when we get out here talking about farmland now, that's against the law to buy, sell, and trade it. Now, this man is in the city. He's on Granville Street. He has a property right. He bought four houses. He wants to use that property. He wants to use it for parking lots. He wants to have his customers that go to his restaurants and bars park on his parking lot behind the restaurant. Does he have a right to do that? State of Texas legislature says absolutely. Here's the formula. Here's the process you have to go through. Now, this man had hired attorneys and paid tens of thousands of dollars and had worked for several years and could not get that property rezoned. He went to one school for 2 weeks and came down and took a look at his problem. I said, here's the solution in your state statutes. And by himself, he went in and did it without a lawyer and did it within 1 year. He did what he couldn't do in several years in 1 year or less by himself, simply by following the rules. Now, property is the holy grail of law. Property is the holy grail of law. When you walk in and tell the judge, we're talking about property and property rights, the judge will perk up. Now, he'll look at you like, well, where in the hell did you come from? There hasn't been any private property in the United States since the 1930s, and you come in here claiming you've got property rights. Every judge knows that when somebody comes in here and they're talking about property, in all probability, we don't have a property. What we have is an equitable interest in property. We may have some property right, but we don't actually own, hold, deal in, or own property, per se. But if you did, God Almighty himself would have absolutely no claim upon that property, if in fact you had any of that. Now there's a little bit more. Property in the strict legal sense is an aggregate of rights which are guaranteed and protected by the government and in the ordinary sense indicates the thing itself rather than the rights attached to it. But get this. Yes, it's true. A piece of land can be property. A house on that land can be property. A lease on that house on that land can be property. rights to ingress or egress in that house, such as an easement, can be property. So property is something much broader than the thing itself. Much, much broader. In fact, you're going to find that you've got more property in intangibles, or incorporeal, as they say, rather than you do incorporable, tangible properties. That your rights are going to come up more often than things, cars, boats, houses, lands. Now, the following have been held to be property. For instance, a certificate of membership in the Board of Trade, a common law action, the right to recover damages from a common carrier for breach of contract, the office of a professor of a chartered university who can be removed only for cause, a man's right to his calling, the right to labor or to practice a profession, the privilege and capacity to exercise the rights common to every man, and that dominion or indefinite right which one may lawfully exercise over particular objects and in generally to the exclusion of all others. Quotations from stock exchanges, or an option for the purchase of a manufacturing plant. The perpetual and exclusive right granted by Governor Dongan in 1686 to the freeholders of East Hampton to purchase Montauk Point from the Indians. A fixed contract right under Spanish law to acquire land. Franchises of a public corporation. A franchise to build waterworks and use the streets for that purpose. All rights in real and personal property and easements, franchises, and incorporeal hereditaments. And a secret code or system of a mercantile company containing the cost and selling price of its merchandise for use of its salesmen. All of those are properties. Those are property rights. Those are properties that can be sued and enforced. You can sue over them and you can enforce your rights to those intangibles. Now here are some examples of things that are not property. A person has no property, nor does he have any vested interest in any rule of the common law. Nor do you have any property right in a liquor license. Nor do you have any property rights in a mere idea unprotected by statute or contract, nor in a coffin in which a corpse has, with the consent of all persons having a pecuniary interest in it, been buried. Debts have been said not to be the property of the debtor. The domestic services of a wife and of her companionship possess none of the attributes of property. All things are not the subject of property. The sea, the air, and the like cannot be appropriated. Everyone may enjoy them, but he has no exclusive right in them. When things are fully our own, or when all others are excluded from meddling with them or from interfering about them, it is plain that no person besides the proprietor who has this exclusive right can have any claim either to use them or to hinder him from disposing of them as he pleases. So that property considered as an exclusive right to things contains not only a right to use those things, but it also contains the right to dispose of those things, either by exchanging them for other things or by giving them away, or without any consideration, or he may even throw them away. Now, where easements of light and air and ingress and egress to buildings were held to be property, the ownership of property implies its use in the prosecution of any legitimate business which is not a nuisance in and of itself. Property is said to be real and personal property. Now, Dicey treats of property as consisting of movables and immovables, but says that this does not square with the distinction known to English lawyers between things real, or real property, and things personal, or personal property. Movables are equivalent to personal property, with the omission of chattels real. Immovables are equivalent to real estate, realty, with the addition of chattels real or leaseholds. And the law is concerned not with things, but with the rights over or in reference to those things that we call property. So, boys and girls, the law is concerned not with the thing itself, not with Mrs. Kello's house, but with her right to just compensation. She doesn't have a right to the house condemned in eminent domain, but she has a right to recover the costs or the value of her property right in that house. So let's understand that property isn't the thing itself, it's the rights that attach to the thing. That she has. She's in the process of throwing it away. Now, whether she will do that or not remains to be seen. It's also said to be when it relates to goods and chattels, absolute or qualified. Absolute property is that which is our own property without any qualification whatsoever. As when a man is the owner of a watch, a book, or other inanimate thing, or of a horse, a sheep, or other animal which never had its natural liberty in a wild state. Qualified property consists in the right which men have over wild animals, which they have reduced to their own possession, and which are kept subject to their power. As, for example, a deer, a buffalo, and the like, which are his own while he has possession of them. But as soon as his possession is lost, his property is gone, unless the animals go aminio revertendi. But a whale harpooned, but not connected with a boat by line, is vested in the crew that harpooned it, and not in the one which afterwards followed and actually captured it. Now, when killed and marked, it belongs to the person who killed it. But property and personal goods may be absolute, or it may be qualified, without any relation to the nature of the subject matter, but simply because more persons than one have an interest in it, or because the right of property is separated from the possession. A bailee of goods, though not the owner, has a qualified property in them, while the owner has the absolute property. Personal property is further divided into property and possession and property, or chose as an action. I'm going to pause here for a moment because I want to point out that Mrs. Scullo doesn't have an absolute property right in her home. She pays a property tax on it. She has a split estate. So she has a qualified property right, and I showed you in South Tucson, Arizona, that as a stockholder in South Tucson, you can have your property sold to satisfy the debts of the corporation. So in that regard, you have a right to recovery of the property or the interest in property that is properly yours, but nothing more than that. So Ms. Kello is entitled to recover just compensation for her property. But she's not receiving just compensation because she's being paid at the residential price rather than at the commercial price. The neighbors around her are going to have their property revalued commercial, and they're going to fall into that windfall. Ms. Kello is entitled to a share of that windfall profit. But instead of going in and arguing that she was entitled to a share of just compensation, she went in and argued that this was not a public purpose. So the court ruled against her, but never ruled on the issue that is really the issue that she wants answered, and that is, well, how much am I going to get paid? My neighbors across the street, their property is going to go up in value by 5 times. I'm not even going to get paid 5 times the amount for my property. I'm going to get paid the residential value of my property. Why shouldn't Ms. Kello get paid 5 times the amount of her property because of the location? You see, the house has a value, boys and girls, and its value is established by other houses of like kind. But other houses of like kind do not have the same location. And it's the location that these developers want. It's not her 50 by 100 square feet of ground. They could buy a piece of ground all over New London, 50 by 100 feet, for half the amount of money that they want to buy Mrs. Kello's house for. The thing that Mrs. Kello has is the view of the harbor. It's the location, boys and girls, not the house. Can you follow that? So while they got Mrs. Kello's mind off on rabbit trails, like this isn't a public purpose, they're in the process of taking her house, and they're going to pay her the full cash value, $200,000, the retail residential value of her house. And they're not going to pay her a dime for the view, which is the only reason that the city of New London and the developers want her particular piece of property. It's not the house that's got the value. It's the view of the harbor. It's the incorporeal value that they're stealing from her, which is worth about $1 million. Now, how do you like that? Well, we got to take a break right here, boys and girls, before we get excited and get on with some more. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School, and that the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Remember, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order your free introductory CD package, would you please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. So how simple that is, just call and answer. 417-273-4967. Keep in mind that the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications used on this program and often endorses and recommends books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. The endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publishers cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by us here at the Law Hour, nor do we expect them to endorse the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Keep in mind that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network or of this local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org, or call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. 4967, talking about the Kello case and eminent domain. We also have a subject here called takings and a takings action. Now, the reason I'm bringing up this thing called absolute or qualified ownership. See, Mrs. Kello has a house, and then she pays a property tax on the house. That's a split estate. But I'll tell you what she owns that nobody else in New London, Connecticut owns. It's the view of the harbor, and that's what the developers want. They don't want to locate this hotel and shopping center anyplace other than right there at Mrs. Kello's. That's why Mrs. Kello's property is so unique, and that's why the developers want it. Now, Mrs. Kello's attorney, in my view, now I don't know what the objective was in their lawsuit, but it would seem like to me that if they wanted to get the maximum value, which is the logical thing to do, because after all, if General Motors can condemn 1 square mile of residential area in Detroit and build a manufacturing plant, well, then I would imagine that the city of New London can condemn Mrs. Kello's house and 15 others and build a hotel complex there. General Motors is just as much a private corporation as is Walmart or Costco or this development corporation that's going to develop this waterfront area where Mrs. Kello lives. But you want to keep in mind that property isn't just the house. The property that these people are after is that view. They could have gone anywhere in New London, Connecticut and bought, you know, acres of real estate for a whole lot less without any houses on it and built their hotel. But they know that customers will come to the waterfront. Customers will come to this location because it's the location, location, location that has the value. And that's an intangible. It's not the house. It's not the rocks. It's not the mineral. It's not the soil. It's the view, boys and girls. And that view is worth $1 million. And the developers do not want to pay this lady for that view. They want to pay her the residential value, and that's why they went with eminent domain. Had they just walked up and said, hey, lady, how much do you want for your property? She would have said, well, I want $200,000 for the house and $1 million for the view. That's $1,200,000 just right out the check. They could have written out the check and done that 16 times, ended up with the property, and we wouldn't have eminent domain. We would have private property rights. Now, that's the way that game should be played. That's the way Moses, that's the way God designed the game to be played, and we used to play the game that way in the United States until we changed our modality of law. We went from the common law to the Roman civil law. We went from the Ten Commandments to the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. Now, going on with Bouvier on property again, property is again divided into corporeal and incorporeal. The former, that is corporeal property, comprehends such property as is perceptible to the senses, such as land, houses, goods, merchandise, and the like. The latter, called incorporeal, consists in legal rights as choses in action, easements, and the like. And in this case, boys and girls, it's the view. In a strict legal sense, land is not property, but rather land is the subject of property. The term property, although in common parlance applied to a tract of land or a chattel like a car, a horse, or a cow, in its legal signification means only the right of the owner in relation to that property. It denotes a right over a determinate thing. Property is the right of any person to possess, use, enjoy, and dispose of a thing. Let me repeat that. Property is the right of any person to possess, use, enjoy, and dispose of a thing. Now, here comes the city of New London, Connecticut, and they say, we want to take your house. Everybody's got their eyeballs on the house, the physical, tangible thing called the corporeal property. The incorporeal property, the thing that makes this house so much more valuable than any other house in the entire city of New London is the view of the lake, the view of the harbor, the view of the bay. And that's not even the subject matter of the lawsuit. So here's Mrs. Kello. She goes into the U.S. Supreme Court and she says, hey, listen, the subject matter here that I want to argue is this taking for public use? Boys and girls, that's the wrong question. The question that she should have been asking is, why do they want to take my 50 by 100 foot lot? Because they're just going to tear the house down and build a hotel. So what is it that makes my property so valuable? Well, boys and girls, it's the right that I have in the view. And they want to pay me for my house $200,000, which is all that the house is worth. But they don't want to pay me a dime for the view. They don't want to pay me a dime for the one thing that is the most valuable asset that I have. And it's the location of my house. It's the location, location, location that has all the value, not the house. The house is just another pile of boards nailed together. That's where the value is, and that's where they're going to screw blue and tattoo Mrs. Kello. They're going to take away from her property, the view. So when I listen to people, you know, when they tell me their tales of woe, they almost inevitably come to me after it's too late. You know, when the horse has been stolen, killed and eaten. Then they call me and say, hey, we found the hide, the carcass, and we know who stole it. And I say, well, gosh, that's too bad. I mean, maybe you can have them put in jail or punished, you know, for the theft, but you're never going to get your horse back, are you? And you'd be better off if you hung on to your horse or if you got paid for your horse when it was taken. So let's understand this one more time, boys and girls. The latter consists in legal rights as choses and action, easements, and the like. In a strict legal sense, land is not property, but it's rather the subject of property. Very important point. The house is the subject of property. It is not the property itself. Now, the house can be property even by itself, but the easement, the view, the incorporeal hereditament that attaches to that particular piece of property, its location, is where the real property value lies. And that's what needs to be brought to the attention of the jury. That's what needs to be brought to the attention of the fact finder and the law maker. Now, in this case, there's another valuable asset, and that is this. That property today, the 16 houses that are overlooking the harbor or the bay, are residential properties that of and by themselves have a residential value. But the developer wants to develop that into commercial property. He wants to take 16 houses that are worth $200,000 each. So let's take 200,000 times 16, and that gives us $3,200,000. He wants to take a piece of real estate which has a residential value of $3,200,000, and he wants to build a hotel, shops, mall. I think there's 16 acres there or something like that. And when they get through, they're going to make that $3,200,000 piece of property worth times five, $16 million. They want to turn that into $16 million worth of commercial property. And that occurs the day the city council rezones it. If Mrs. Kello's house wasn't on that piece of property and it was just a vacant lot, it would be worth five times as much as the house sitting on the lot today. And that's the low end value, by the way. Could be worth a whole lot more than that. And here's what's going to happen. Across the street, there are 16 houses, aren't there? Mrs. Kello's back door faces onto the harbor. Her front door faces onto the street, which goes along the Harbor Road. We'll call this Harbor Road. The people that live on the other side of the Harbor Road do not have as commanding a view of the harbor as Mrs. Kello and her 15 neighbors. When that street is zoned commercial, those houses, 16 of them, right straight across the street from Mrs. Kello and everybody else, goes up in value five times, bare minimum, coming right out of the chute. Shouldn't Kello and the other 15 participate in the same profit and profit structure that the developer and the 16 owners of property across the street are going to participate in? You see, that's another incorporeal right that attaches to Miss Kello's property. And that is, by taking my property, we can make that commercial. And when the city makes this commercial, my property becomes worth five times more. So what the city is saying is, well, Miss Kello, we're not going to rezone your property before we condemn it, so that we can take your property for $200,000, then we'll rezone it after we own it. We'll rezone it to commercial, which will make it worth five times more. So we'll take your $200,000 property and we'll pay you $200,000 and make that property worth $1 million. Then we'll sell it to the developers for $1 million. Wait a minute. And then the 16 properties on the other side of the street immediately become worth $1 million, and then McDonald's and Hardee's and Wendy's will come along and buy those properties up. Just like the real estate developer I told you, he'll go by and he'll pay five times. He'll pay $1 million a lot for each one of those houses to build a McDonald's on. And that's because when you build a commercial property, that commercial property, nobody's concerned about the exact value of the land under it. They're concerned about how many dollars does this thing generate per year. And a McDonald's restaurant probably generates $1 million, $2 million, $3 million a year in sales. So they're going to buy a piece of land, put a McDonald's restaurant on it that's going to sit there for 30 years that generates $3 million a year in sales and maybe nets $500,000. I mean, this thing is going to pay for itself 15 times over at $500,000 a year, isn't it? I mean, this thing amortizes out over a period of time. It's immensely valuable. And the people who are forced to sell it at the low-end price are the people that are getting screwed, blued, and tattooed. They're not getting just compensation. And I think they could get just compensation if they would take that to a jury and say, well, look at the numbers, boys and girls. This isn't fair. This isn't just. And I want to point out that the Fifth Amendment calls for just compensation. Not just compensation, but it's got to be just compensation. Not just any compensation. It's got to be fair and equitable compensation. You got to pay this lady for the view. You got to pay this lady for the commercial value of the property that you people are going to take away from her against her will and over her objection. This is not the free will trading or the free will use of her property. Now, she doesn't own that property. It's a split estate. Remember, the city owns that property, as evidenced by the fact that she pays a property tax on it. It isn't the boards that's in the house, boys and girls, that she owns that's so valuable. It's the right to the property that's so valuable. And so what the government does is they come over here and they get your mind off on another track. It's kind of like our economy and the Iraq war. Nobody's mind is on the economy. Everybody's mind is on the Iraq war, which is why we have a war in Iraq, is to keep your mind off the economy. I mean, if you people out there knew and understood the dire straits that the American economy is in, well, you people wouldn't be able to sleep at night. And government is a master at getting your mind off of what's important and onto something that isn't. And that's what happened here in the Kello case. Everybody's mind is on the subject matter of, is this a public use? Hell, that's been established for at least 50 years that I know of, maybe 75. Yes, it's a public use. Yes, it's a legitimate public use. Is it fair, equitable, and right? No, it isn't. But then that's the way the law has been for the last 50 or 75 years. Why sit here and argue? Why sit here and try to reinvent the wheel? It's a waste of your time. So keep in mind then, in a strict legal sense, land is not property, but the subject of property. The term property, although in common parlance applied to a tract of land or a chattel in its legal signification, means only the right of the owner in relation to it. What is Miss Kello's right in relation to that pile of boards sitting on that land? It's the right to that view. It's the right to just compensation. It's the right to commercial value. And why is that? Because the intent of the developers is to convert that to commercial use. They're not hiding it from anybody. They've already had public hearings. They've already said, we're going to take this residential property and we're going to convert this into commercial property. We're going to take this less valuable residential property. We're going to convert this into $1 million, multi-million dollar, many, many millions of dollars worth of commercial real estate. And we're going to steal it from these 16 people and we're not going to pay them for the view, which is what makes this property so valuable. We're not going to pay them the commercial value for this property because today it's zoned residential. Oh, I don't think that a jury would sit by and let the city do that. I don't think they would let a private developer, I don't think they'd let Costco or Walmart get away with that if you went in there and presented this case. I think they'd listen to you. I think they would make sure that you got paid just compensation. At least that's my view. If I was sitting on the jury, I'd make sure they paid you every damn dime. Now, you're not entitled to $1 billion there, Mrs. Kello, but you're entitled to that view, and there's a value to that view. You're entitled to that location. Now, that's your property right. You've got an absolute incorporeal property right to that piece of property. It's not that they need a 50 by 100 feet piece of ground. There's all kinds of ground all over New London, 50 by 100 feet. It's that particular 50 by 100 foot piece of ground that they need. And that's because of that location. It's the only location in New London, Connecticut. And you've got it. And you're out here arguing over a rabbit trail that doesn't have any merit while they're in the process of stealing the most valuable thing you got. That's the thing that galls me. Now there's more. If property and land consists in certain essential rights, and a physical interference with the land substantially subverts one of those rights, which interference takes pro tanto the owner's property, the right of using a thing indefinitely is an essential quality of absolute property without which absolute property can have no legal existence. Did you get that, Ms. Kello? Your right to that view on that 50 by 100 foot piece of ground is absolute, and anybody that takes that away from you takes away from you a property right. And I don't think anybody has offered you a dime for that view or the commercial value that they intend to put it there. Now, use is the real side of property. And this right of user necessarily includes the right and power of excluding others from the land. From the very nature of these rights of user and of exclusion, it is evident that they cannot be materially abridged without ipso facto taking the owner's property. We're in the process of a takings case here, Ms. Kello. Takings case. That's what this is. We're going to take your property, your view, and we're going to take your right to commercial value, and we're going to pay you a residential value. We're going to force you to sell because that's the only piece of property that we can use that will make the kind of money that we want to make, and we don't want to share any of it with you, the original owner. What would you think if you owned a piece of property down by the river, and along comes the Goyef Atkinson Company, and they want to build a dam across here? And this dam is going to be used for public purpose, no doubt about it. But this particular piece of property is the only site on this river where we can build a dam. We can't go up the river and build a dam. We can't go down the river and build a dam because of the rock formation, because of the choke point in the gorge. This is the only place that we can locate a dam, and we need to buy your piece of property to build this dam. Not only is the physical piece of real estate important, the fact of its location makes it important. That location. And that location is a property. It's not the physical rocks, the mineral, or the dirt. It's the right to use that rock, mineral, and dirt. And when we take that away from you, we have taken your property. That's called a taking. Well, that's strictly prohibited. You can't take my property without just compensation. Now, the city is about to take it. Now, Ms. Kello, she's gone into court and she said, well, is this a public purpose? The court said, yes, it is. All right, now in round two, she comes back and she says, okay, you're taking my property for a public purpose. Now, give me just compensation. Well, how much is just compensation? The commercial value of the property in today's market would be a fair price plus the view. What's that view worth? Oh, I don't know what that view is worth. That's kind of an intangible. I think it's worth $1 million plus the commercial value plus the sticks and boards that fit on it. Now pay me and I'll leave. I don't know whether she's going to get paid, but let me tell you, boys and girls, most people do not get paid the real value of their property. They don't get paid the real value of their property because they're cunningly coerced into waiving their rights due to their ignorance. That's why I encourage people to become knowledgeable. Learn what your rights are and learn how to advance those rights. It doesn't take very much. It just requires a law degree. And a law degree is the easiest degree to obtain. A lawyer is the most ignorant animal God ever put breath into. If there's a more ignorant or less person, a less profession, a lesser profession, I don't know what it is. I know I'm one of them. At least a doctor, you know, he has to know something. An engineer actually has to be able to count. I've told you time and again, hell, a lawyer doesn't even know what an honest-to-God pleading, contract, will, or promissory note is. He's never seen one. He went to law school and graduated, never saw a promissory note. Wouldn't know how to write one if his life depended on it. That's why he has a legal secretary. That's why we have legal writers and legal secretaries, because we're so damn dumb. That's why the Chief Justice said of us lawyers that 90% of the lawyers are incompetent. He wasn't whistling Dixie, he just told the truth. If you could just learn how to become competent, boys and girls, you'd be ahead of 90% of the lawyers in America if you were just competent. Well, I'm about out of time. I got to leave it right there. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. I'm going to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.